I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Earth proved a great disappointment to us. Contrary to all common sense, it was controlled by men. Typically, we found it to be crude, primitive, muddling along in an untidy and disease-prone existence. We withdrew. And Earth was declared out of bounds to all civilized space travel.
This is the Extra Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 296 for the May 11th, 2024 weekend. I am Pile of White Plastic Cylinders David T. Cole, and I'm here with Grey Comet Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm moving towards Uranus.
And Space Yacht Captain Tara Ariano.
Oh, men could never.
Welcome to Extra Extra Hot Great, the podcast that puts one extra in Extra Hot Great and presents to you, dear supporters, Extra Extra Hot Great. Today we are talking about, as our lead topic, Star Maidens, Season 1, Episode 1, Escape to Paradise, a 70s British sci-fi show where men do not rule the world, women do. Have you ever? So between what you just heard and this following narration, the setting will be established for you, dear listener.
A society ruled by women. This perfect condition existed as long ago as 1,000 orbits, when our planet, Medusa, belonged to the solar system of Proxima Centauri. These were the golden years of our history. Led by the Grand Council of Women, we had created a world of intellect, of leisure, and of advanced technology where the menial tasks and some others were patiently performed by our men. Then came the great comet Dionysus. As it passed, its vast mass dragged us towards the frozen infinity of outer space, slowly at first, giving us a chance to plan and build the cities we know today deep under the surface, before Medusa was finally encased in a blanket of ice.
Oh, no. So we start the show in one of Medusa's underground cities in an extremely 70s set of orange and beige forms of buttresses and whatnot, of random circular portholes and walls and in the structures of hard plastic ore benches and spiral staircases. And they're all sort of got these white cylinders all just lying around all over the place, all loosey-goosey. Absolutely fantastic set design. Mm-hmm. I absolutely loved it.
Yep.
We start with a man in his 30s. His name is Adam.
I don't get it.
Adam is making his way to the lower levels in his tight white pants and his Pathway to Paradise tunic with arrow-shaped cuts showing off his chest and his chest hair.
Welcome to the 70s.
He meets up with fellow lower-class citizen and almost three-stooge Shem in a spaceship repair bay. The planet-wide educational system is playing, and Adam has some thoughts about it and his place in society.
You have been watching the first part of our history program for junior girls.
second part, entitled Heroines Through the Ages, will appear shortly.
Heroines through the ages. And what about the men? Who does the work on this planet? Who builds the cities? Who looks after the kids? Who slaves all the day over a microwave stove?
Keep quiet, Adam. That's the way it is. That's the way it always will be. It's a woman's world.
No, not for much longer, Shem. My plans are almost ready.
Slave over his microwave stove. Get to it, chop-chop.
Relatable, man. Relatable.
Adam's not going to take all this sitting down. He's got secret plans to improve his station in life. But how secret are they?
Here is an important news item.
Ignore it. Or we daren't.
We bring you grave news from the future. A few moments ago, our prediction computers began to issue warnings of a revival of activities among the illegal men's liberation movement. Counselor Octavia, head of security, is in our prediction room at this moment, consulting the Destiny computer for details.
So, we get a glimpse of this prediction computer, and it is the most 70s thing you're going to see all week. There's a block of refractive lights, sort of like the things you would put on the back of a bicycle, you know, those sort of like reflectors, but they got lights behind them. If you ever had the Radio Shack game Fabulous Fred, it sort of looks like they stuck a Fabulous Fred in this console. And there's like random metal panels also hosting buttons of different sizes. Nothing's labeled, so you don't know what anything is. And then there's these two transparent areas. I thought long and hard about how to describe this on a podcast. What I came up with is like a truly random set of forms and colors, as if Armageddon was happening, but only between Modrian and like Joan Miro in a Radio Shack. So the plan that Adam is talking about is Shem is going to finish repairs, and he and Adam are going to steal the ship, which belongs to Supreme Counselor Fulvia, the president's niece. Shem has reservations, because Shem's having trouble manning up.
But how are you going to get hold of the electronic keys and the astronavigation chart?
As Fulvia's personal domestic, I enjoy certain privileges.
I don't get it.
Adam also has reservations, sexy reservations, with his mistress, the Supreme Counselor Fulvia, as the soundtrack immediately informs us.
Adam.
Yes, madam.
Turn off the oestrogen lamp.
Yes, madam.
Adam, did I dismiss you?
No.
Then come over here next to me.
So they're in her bedroom. This bedroom is just jam-packed with these random smoky translucent acrylic sculptures that like surround her bed like the Brontosaurus ribs over the Flintstones car. The floor is covered by a giant white fur rug, which is also her bed's covered with. I don't know if it's supposed to be one gigantic giant rug blanket.
Sexversation pit.
Yes. And there's also more of these damn white cylinders in the background just there. I'm going to guess to hide some actual electrical outlets they were using for the lighting. Mm-hmm. The end tables in the bedroom are hexagons, in case you were wondering what decade this was. It is still the 70s.
Yes.
The women of Medusa have access to advanced healthcare, as we discover in this next power exchange.
What do you think I've lost today?
In weight, madam, or age?
In age, you fool. You know, my weight never changes.
About 3 weeks.
Is that all?
Yes, madam.
Adam, aren't you going to tell me that I look more beautiful than I did yesterday?
Yes, madam.
Then say it.
You look more beautiful than yesterday, Supreme Counselor Fulvia.
Thank you. Now you may prepare something for me to eat.
I don't know what Adam's going to make, but I think he knows what he's going to be eating a little bit. Am I right?
I don't get it.
So I guess the Medusians have figured out the secret to eternal youth, or at least long, long lives there. Adam calls Shem. The time is now, but Shem has self-confidence issues from a life of being beaten down by his cruel female mistresses.
Mechanic Shem.
Shem, I have the keys and the charts. How long will you be?
Well, I've still got a drive motor in pieces.
Hurry, we don't have long.
We can't drive a space yacht, Adam.
It's far too difficult for a man. Get that yacht ready for launching.
Men drivers, am I right?
The worst. Oh.
The net is closing in now on Adam. Supreme Counselor Octavia has arrived from the prediction computer to question him.
Counselor Octavia tells me she has you listed as a possible subversive. Is that true?
A what, madam?
He doesn't understand long words. I have told her that you are my loyal domestic and that you love your mistress. Am I right, Adam?
Yes, Counselor.
Any male domestic on Medusa would give his life to serve a woman as beautiful as I. Am I not right, Adam?
Oh, yes, Counselor.
Then kiss me.
I shall wish to interrogate him.
So at this point, I'm going to let you know that Star Maidens was a British-German co-production.
No kidding.
We must have the information from the men. All right, I don't have the fashion vocabulary to describe what Octavia is wearing when she arrives in this scene. The first layer is like a dusty blue jumper, mm-hmm. but with booby holes in it.
Yes.
And purple cuffs and accents. Mm-hmm. And on top uh-huh. of that, she's wearing like an art class instructor smock in like a mossy green, but with many, many randomly placed holes all piped with black. It's something from mm-hmm. like Futurama, like Leela would wear, mm-hmm. but like much worse.
For a date, yes.
Yes, exactly.
Not mm-hmm. on her day-to-day. This is like a dressy outfit.
On Medusa, it's your interrogation smock.
Yes, of course.
For Leela, it would be a dado. Mm-hmm. Also, Octavia's got all the hair. Like, they may have put three wigs on her.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of notes about how a matriarchal society is managing wardrobe. Like, everyone is in platform go-go boots. Like, mm-hmm. there's absolutely no way that a woman-led society would not have everybody in Birks. Come on.
Yep.
And the security team of this society is running around in boy shorts and bare legs. Like, that doesn't seem like it's going to hold up a gun belt, but what do I know? I'm a resident of the patriarchy. I mean, there's a lot going on here, wardrobe-wise, most of which I really like, but some of it doesn't make sense for the established mise-en-scene of this interplanetary society. Just my opinion.
Well, not only are the women in charge, therefore you would expect more things like pockets and pants, let's say. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, being yeah. comfortable as you walk around, not having to wear your Roman and Greek-inspired togas and dresses and all that sort of stuff. So after that, Fulvia makes Adam kiss her again, though you meant it, before dismissing him for a pre-meeting nap.
Set the hypnomat for 10 micro-orbits only.
Nonsense. I just like when TV shows, they just add micro and solar and soul and galactic Souls. To things that we yeah. all know. It's fantastic. So he turns it on and it's so loud and it flashes bright colors in her face. I have no idea how this thing is supposed to work. Like, it would be like trying to nap in a disco of the era. Okay, this next scene is nuts. On his way back to the ship, he's ordered to stop by the Medusa PA system and he makes a run for it. He's chased by a security team who look like they are from the movie Rollerball with James Caan.
Yep.
If
yep.
Rollerball had totally. A sexies ladies team. Mm-hmm. Four of them give chase in their plastic visored helmets, extremely short tops, and extremely tight gym boy shorts. And yeah, mm-hmm. as Sarah mentioned, they all have knee-high white boots as they are chasing somebody as a paramilitary force in their white go-go boots. They shoot at him with his laser guns, killing some poor janitor who was just like in the wrong place at the wrong time. He just like, and he falls down. Adam manages to escape with Shem in the ship, and you'll never guess where they're going.
Earth?
Earthship. Where the stories are true, men rule their own world.
Oh, such a planet must be paradise.
Paradise.
Yep.
Once again, the music is like just so over the top, baffling that I love it.
And that's about halfway through the episode, and it's really the fun half of this episode. The second half of the episode introduces us to the characters on Earth working at the British Institute of Radio Astronomy, who will eventually make contact with these two escaping men. The intro features one of them rushing to their HQ somewhere in the, I'm going to guess, London outskirts, and brakes hard at his parking space outside. There's a little reserved for sign to let you know the character's name and the other character's names about he's about to meet. And it's made of presentation board. It's not a wood sign. It's bent on the piece of wood they stapled it to, and you can see it move in the light breeze. Someone definitely thought the scene was going to be happening in a parking garage and built a prop for that. And they, you know, we got to shoot this outside.
Oh, no.
Oh, oh, bollocks.
Oh, Nigel.
Yes.
How dare you?
Oh, Syme. How could you?
While en route to Earth, Adam and Shem discuss their chances at success.
How long before they come after us? You know how our women masters like to talk. By the time they've finished arguing about us, we'll be through the asteroid belt.
Look forward to hearing that again in the outro. Thank you.
Oh, my God. So keep in mind, they're still on the way to Earth. The women of Medusa finally give chase. They finally get their spaceship up in the air. The men are escaping in a dart-shaped ship. The women are in a donut-shaped ship.
Come on.
The last thing that really happens is Earth feeds the escaping ship coordinates for a safe entry through the atmosphere. They outrun the women pursuing them. And the last scene is this baffling one of Adam and Shem floating down an English river in some two-story inflatable bubble. Like, that was the escape mechanism in the ship. You don't see them using it. They're just like, how are we going to get there? Are we going to get there? Mm-hmm. And then they're on this bubble. Shem is sitting down in the first floor, and Adam is standing above him on the second floor. It is such a weird image.
So weird.
And that's the episode. That's where it ends.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
What a time.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
I have to say, I recommend watching that, like taking half an edible or not. You don't really need it. And watching this because the visuals are both extremely amateurish in some places. Like, there's one sequence where the quote ship is supposed to be going through quote space. It's actually just like a bunch of black velvet in some basement studio in Surrey. And I'm pretty sure that for Jupiter, they just got a watermelon and put a red piece of paper on it. Like, okay. And then a lot of the scenes are just like the old school cheap Jack sci-fi diorama that you used to see in the middle of the last century, or like models for like, our fair city will now host the world's fair. Please expect to find the pavilion of tomorrow. And then it's just like someone put one lighted diode in a bunch of painted cardboard, but it's actually done really beautifully and to scale. And it just brings you back to like going to the planetarium as a child.
Yeah.
And like, it seemed really wonderful, but it was literally smoke and mirrors in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it was really just a like a pleasure to look at it, that they're like, all right, well, here's a comet. We're going to put that like Lucite plastic sheeting that's like tinted, or like gels, that we're going to borrow some gels that we usually use for the lights in the studio. And we're going to make a paper mache rock. And Pippa and Simon in the props lab are going to come up with something. And it's going to be groovy and swell.
I love that the comet is basically just that paper mache rock you're talking about. Someone doused it with lighter fluid, stuck it on a wire, and then just dropped it towards the camera. And that was their effect.
Yeah. And it's like, you better get it in one because we're out of paper mache.
Yeah. Yeah. Nigel, move the camera quick.
It really was like sort of strangely beautiful. Mm-hmm.
The visuals are great. The visuals are probably the best translation from into the real world of book covers, sci-fi book covers of this era.
Absolutely.
They really look like the paintings that would be on I Have No Face, Says the Moon by whoever.
Yeah. A Fall of Saturn Dust by the estate of Isaac Asimov.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you guys in with this whole like ladies ruin the world thing? Because it seems like bad idea to me.
It seems like a lot of work.
Yeah.
I don't have the patience to keep my legs that hair-free as required for all the boots and the hot pants, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the costuming is really funny. It's always amusing to see, like, what changes and what stays the same when they try to do these, like, gender flip narratives where it's like, the imagination goes this far and no further of, like, what else would be different if power structures were reversed and, you know, whoever wrote this did not think it the whole way through. As Sarah said, this is not what women are wearing if they're not worried about the male gaze because they've essentially... Yes, Dave.
Well, here's my theory on that.
Please.
Is back in Medusa history, the heroines of Medusa, as we caught the tail end of that radio program, were actually the queen bees that won the civil war in Medusa once upon a time.
Oh, okay.
So they're the people that are now doing TikTok videos about, like, you know, how to do makeup and stuff like that. They're the ones that won... And rule Medusa.
That would explain this extremely elaborate eyeshadow high up in the power structure, the Medusan power structure. Like, I don't dislike it. It's beautiful, but it does seem like various subconsulate figures. And also, like, you're just going to nap. Like, isn't that going to come off when you're fucking Adam and napping in your shag rug sex fixation pit while the soundtrack from a social hygiene film about getting a diaphragm in space is playing? It's gloriously bad, but not dull for a single second. I mean, until the end when you're like...
Earth.
Then the bubble shows up and you're like, all is forgiven, giant bubble.
I mean, the little legs kicking, it's got it all. It was I won't act like I was not embarrassed to be watching it on the plane next to somebody who was watching Poor Things, but that's how it went in my life, and now they know that about me and I can't change that.
No.
All right, guys, it's time for a segment we like to call Ask HG. All right, this is a pre-tape, so no Ask EHG question. This week, we're going to get straight into your questions for us, starting with Bezor Laura. Who would win an EHG Thunderdome? Tara versus Dave versus Sarah. Tara, who's going to win the EHG Gang Thunderdome?
God, this was really hard.
So, was it?
Yes. Okay. Starting with me, I'm in terrible shape. As everyone knows, I am not motivated by self-preservation. If anyone knows anything about me, it's that. I'm going to give up. Dave, meanwhile, has hip issues and just general, you know.
I'm falling apart.
What's that?
I'm falling apart.
He's got
internally, externally, midternally.
Mentally, historically.
Mentally, I'm out. Checked out already.
There's a lot going on. So I got to give this one to Sarah on top of our own separate deficits. Sarah's also the tallest of all of us. She's got the biggest wingspan. I think Sarah's going to take it. I don't know. Sarah, what do you think?
Well, Sarah is tall, much meaner than she's even given credit for, which is plenty, and a hair puller.
Can I just insert my argument in here right here? Because it is Sarah, she's mean and she's tall.
Sarah, mean and tall, like the book. But I actually went with old chaos forward McRandom rules change Cole, frankly.
Yeah.
I mean... Tara could outsmart both of us, and I could maybe get some punches in, but I just feel like Dave's going to run into the Thunderdome with a frying pan and a marshmallow peep launcher and be like, we'll change, and the next thing we know, we don't know anything because we're dead.
It's not that I'm changing the rules. It's you just have a fundamental misunderstanding of them. But I don't want to debate that because the real issue is as a participant in the Thunderdome, I could not run that Thunderdome.
Yeah, but I feel like you'd find a way. Just feel like you would bring like that snack table that you started outside that all of a sudden affected the entire Thunderdome, that you just come in like swinging it over your head, and Tara and I would be like, fuck this.
Uh-huh. It's like when I don't know how to do something on the computer and you're like, why didn't you just try this? And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't like this is... Sarah and I both have that, like, you tell us the rules, we're going to follow the rules, whereas you're sneaky, and you're going to try and weasel out of...
Are you saying I have a criminal mind? Is that what...
Yes.
Well, I mean, I do.
I still don't think you're going to win, but I understand where Sarah's coming from.
But let's make this clear. I am not the Thunderdome governing board.
Okay.
I am explaining their rules to you in our Thunderdome
episode.
Until
you are, though.
I am not Mr. Thunderdome.
Okay, well,
that's what
your...
Mr. Thunderdome would fucking say. This is my point.
What is your answer, Dave?
Oh, Tara, she's tall and she's mean.
No, that's Sarah. I mean,
sorry. Sarah, she's tall and she's mean. You're just mean, Tara.
Ooh, wow, plot twist.
Oh.
All right, Elsbeth with an O has a question for us. Imagine your pet is at school and you get a call from the principal's office. What is the reason for that call? Sarah.
Before I answer, I would like to say that this Discord thread has brought me great joy. The Discord always brings me great joy, especially the pets channel, but this in particular has been hilarious the last few days. Ms. Bunting, we've talked about this. Bear refuses to stay in his seat. He's constantly interrupting classmates and running to the classroom door to tattle on passersby. Nor will he let littler kids have a turn on the swings, by which I mean the sofa. Please come get him. Everyone hates him. Dave.
Knowlton, our elder dog, refuses to go outside for recess.
Oh my God, I said that in exactly the same words.
Because it's a little damp out.
I didn't know if it was that or because he just didn't want to play with the other kids. Because it's also, he likes to keep to himself.
Sandy keeps yelling at the dogs across the hall, even though she gets along with them fine when in the gym.
Okay.
Yeah, bear.
Mm-hmm. So we matched on Knowlton, but I had, when no one was looking, Sandy destroyed 4 hand puppets and a nap mat.
Yeah.
Because she has ruined every toy we have bought her except for like just straight up rope, like tug toys.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say she has ruined everything and kind of that. Love you, bear.
All right. And with an E-E-E-E, if your co-hosts were nail polish, love it. What color finish name would they be? Sarah is Nightshade.
Thanks.
And Tara's color is Golden Arch.
Oh, I love that.
Tara.
Well, because of his vintage, Dave is Harvest Gold in matte.
All right. I'll take it. I like that.
You know, he's from the 70s. Yeah. He does like that shade.
Yep. It was Harvest Gold or Avocado Green.
That's right.
I prefer Harvest Gold.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah is, of course, Chanel Vamp Glossy, a classic. Sarah.
Thank you so much. Dave is Colé, a very bright orangey red, like hot sauce.
Yep.
And Tara is Prairie Rose, a pleasing matte pink with a hint of purple, which makes a nice change of pace for your French manicure.
Dr. Calhoun has a question for us. What sound do you use for your morning alarm, Sarah?
The iPhone twinkle sound, but it's interesting that you ask this now because it really has not been working lately. Either I need to get to bed earlier or I need to change the phone alarm because I've been sleeping through it a lot.
Mm-mm.
But it's the do 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 do.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And it's not fucking working anymore. Tara.
Mine, when I did the last system update, it switched to something that I didn't notice, and I wasn't really thinking about switching it back to what I actually prefer until this question came through. So thank you, Dr. Calhoun. Dave also got to, because you can't just do it on headphones, even though I did have them in, Dave got to listen to me very quickly scrolling through all of the standard iPhone sounds while I was determining this yesterday. It is, in fact, harp. The just, you know, arpeggios. Mm. Dave.
Mine is Journey because it's soft, yet very annoying.
Uh-huh.
Wait, gets worse.
Oh, God. It has movements.
Very In Search Of theme.
Yes.
And not in a good way.
Mm.
So, yeah, Journey. I was like, oh, fuck. There used to be one that was like, dun, dun, dun. It was almost like the Deep Purple song, like with Smoke on the Water or whatever it is. It was almost like that one. It was like, it was a little too much. So I went with this one. So it's like, oh, fuck me. Where's my phone? Turn that off. I'm off. Elsbeth with an O has the second of three questions. Does chili have beans? Tara, does chili have beans?
I understand this is a question some people ask, but it's psycho to me that this is even something that is up for debate. Of course, chili has beans. Dave?
I can tell you mine does when I make chili, and I make chili pretty often.
Yeah.
Mine has three types of beans, in fact. I put in ranch beans, black beans, and red kidney beans. So bean-rific. I think if you don't have beans in your chili, you might just be eating a sloppy joe without
a bun. Thank you. Exactly.
Yes, exactly. And since my chili can't have beef in it, then it's just like tomato soup. It's the fucking point of that. Chili has beans.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Here's the third from Elsbeth with an O. What is, Tara, the worst TV wig of all time?
This is a tough one, and I'm sure people who watched Once Upon a Time, the Disney show, would disagree, but I have to go with Corey Stoll in The Strain. Just truly, absolutely unconvincing on any level, to the point where they finally had to be like, okay, he vampirism made all his hair fall out.
I want your hair, blood. You're bald forever. That's your curse.
That's right.
Cranky Pants has our next question. I'm reading it as submitted. What is your favorite type taco? Please answer as written. Sarah?
Hard shell bohemian typewriter. Dave?
Well, I'm on a restrictive diet these days, so the only type taco I can eat are sans serif.
Font joke.
taco font jokes.
Gotta let it out.
All right, Tara, what do you got?
I'm going to Torchy's and I'm getting the Trajan Park Trashy.
Nice.
Thank you.
That's good.
Thank you.
They have one called Trailer Park Trashy for those who don't live in the area.
Thank you.
Renzi, what is it? Tara.
Well, according to the song Epic by Faith No More, it's it.
Yep.
Sarah.
What it is. And you can't change it. Dave.
Yeah, I went with Tara's answer. I assume that Renzi wanted the Faith No More answer to that one. So I gave it to her. Pizza Carrie follows up with, who can it be now? Sarah.
Colin, hey, Dave.
Anything it wants. Tara.
As I was preparing this yesterday, it was literally the Spectrum guy coming to try to sell me a landline. Unsuccessfully.
All right. Sidebar.
Yes.
In the past week, I visited both HEB and Walmart. HEB, for some reason, usually a very conscientious sort of grocery store, customer first actions, at least, you know, front facing ones. Mm-hmm. They let Spectrum into their store to clipboard mug you when you come in, which is very unlike HEB.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yikes.
Went into Walmart and they had like T-Mobile or somebody set up there. It's like, how many people walking into a store are going to change their telemedia stuff on the fly?
I always think that too, but it must work or they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
All right, Millsnack, next question. What is your pitch for Dancing with the Stars, as in Ted Danson? It's Cosmos, but goodbye, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Hello, Sam Malone.
Love it.
Ted Danson chats with fabulous celebrities from the world of entertainment in this nightly half-hour interview show. Sarah.
It's a dance show, but contestants must recreate only Sam and Diane's last dance in the fifth season finale of Cheers.
Hmm. Kimba has our last question. It is, which cereal mascot would be the best kisser? This is one of my favorite questions we've had. Mm-hmm. All right. Which cereal mascot would be the best kisser? Sarah.
I'm not trying to get weird with the animal mascots. More for you if you choose to do this. I am getting blizzy with Count Chocula. Tara.
But why do you think he's the best kisser?
Because there's, when you get rid of the animal mascots and like insects, there's like only four of them left. And I don't know.
The answer is experience.
Oh,
he's been
around
for a long time.
True.
He's got them chocolate lips.
Mm-hmm.
Blah.
I gave this a lot of thought. Ew. Cereal is, of course, my area. Diggum, the Honey Smacks frog, too aggressive with that tongue. Mm-hmm. Trix Rabbit, too manic. Toucan Sam's bill would hurt.
Yep.
King Vitaman has not had to put in any effort in decades, and you know that. So I have to go with a guy who is sweet, but not too sweet, and who really cares about my heart health, and that's going to be Buzz B from Honey Nut Cheerios. Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tara, my answer was King Vitaman.
Wow.
He's got, now I'm talking about the yellow background human photo version of King Vitaman.
Yes,
of course.
I just put it into our doc so that we can put it in the show notes.
Because King Vitaman went through a cartoon phase, and I'm not talking about that guy. King Vitaman has experience. He's an older dude. He's got longevity. And he's got power. And all those things turn me on. Give it to me, King Vitaman.
Oh, my God.
My God. Someone please fire me. It's so upsetting.
We have to imagine when I'm doing this, I got his mutton chops in my hands. You're not going anywhere, King Vitaman.
He doesn't have mutton chops. Cut. Look at him in the friggin' chat.
All right, he's got overgrown side hair.
Yes.
Around
his
ears.
This is the objection. It's the mutton chops.
More like King Vita, my man.
That's right. More for you, baby.
Wrightwood has your ask EH. We lost Sarah. Wrightwood has our last. I can't tell if we lost her or she just had some sort of episode. This might be the last episode ever.
Yes! Wow.
A real professional would laugh into the mic, Sarah.
You can still hear her.
All right. Well, Sarah recovers. God. Wrightwood has your Ask EHG question this week. Create and cast a TV show starring only dogs from other live action shows. So that is your directive. Go to the Ask EHG channel on our Discord. If you're not on Discord, really easy to sign up. There's a FAQ on our site. You can go there. There's a couple instructions. Bing, bang, boom, you're on. And then you can answer as well in the Ask EHG channel.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Oh, that is unsettling.
It is time to discover this week's not quite top 11 list. They're not quite top 11 list. We're bringing 10 things to the table. I will go first. This is my not quite top 11 Saturday morning programs whose titles could double as basic cable shows in a different genre. Following?
Okay.
Yep.
Number one, Hammerman.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, Real Monsters. Number three, the Ant Hill Mob. Number four, the Dukes. Number five, the Secrets of Isis. Number six, Wonder Wheels. Number seven, Meatballs and Spaghetti. Number eight, Ring Raiders.
Oh, yeah.
Number nine, spelt with a K and ending with an exclamation mark, it's Clutter. And number 10, not quite, Saturday morning program whose title could double as a basic cable show in a different genre is Mega Babies. Sarah.
I am here to present not quite top 11 televised portrayals of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, presented in alphabetical order of actor last name. Jodie Balfour from For All Mankind in The Crown. Jacqueline Bisset, America's Prince, colon, the John F. Kennedy Jr. story, Blair Brown, Kennedy, Roma Downey, A Woman Named Jackie, Sarah Michelle Gellar, A Woman Named Jackie, Jennifer Goodwin, Killing Kennedy, Jill Hennessy, Jackie Ethel Joan, colon, the Women of Camelot, Katie Holmes, the Kennedys, Jacqueline Smith, Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy, and Emily Van Camp, believe it, Jackie Bouvier Kennedy Onassis. There have been a lot of TV movies about this lady. They're all named different things, and a lot of people named Jacqueline play her, probably badly. I won't be finding out. Tara.
I've brought the not quite top 11 Canadian snacks to enjoy while watching TV. Is this a reach? Yes. It's my podcast. I don't care. I'm going to count them down to the number one most Canadian delicious snack, starting with number 10, Dare Jubes, standard gumdrop type of things. Number 9, Old Dutch Popcorn Twists, basically just corn and salt, no flavor attached, just salt delivery system. Number eight, and this one comes with a hat tip to Sarah D. Bunting, who on my recent trip to Canada gifted me a Tim Hortons gift card, and it was the unofficial sponsor of said trip. I'm going to go with Timbits. You know, you think that all donuts are the same, and then you have a Timbit, and you're like, nope, they really are superior. Number seven, cousin of the Dare Jube, Dare Super Sour Jubes. Mm. I'm not sure they make them anymore, because really? The last few times I've asked for them, I have not received them. Oh. And I don't know if that's why, but they are very superior. Not like Sour Patch Kids. They don't have that, you know, sugary salt stuff on them. They're just sour in and of themselves. Number six, Twizzlers. Canadian Twizzlers are superior. Yes. I don't want to argue about it. It's just a fact. Number five, Dare Ruffles, not the chips. These are the chocolate-coated coconut cookie things. Dave, these are not for you, and I don't need to hear about it. Number four, President's Choice Decadent Chocolate Chip Cookie, a legend for a reason. Mm-hmm. Number three, also not for Dave. He hates these. Don't care. Hawkins Cheesies, the corniest cheese snack that you can get. Number two, Super Nibs, a cousin of the Twizzler. Basically, if you've ever had cherry nibs, imagine they were all in one big piece, like a piece of licorice. That's your Super Nib.
Oh, so
and
good.
Number one, with a fucking bullet, how has this snack not penetrated to America yet? Philadelphia cream cheese dill pickle dip. Thank you. Bought some on my last night of the trip. Ate it while watching Dead Boy Detectives. It was a nice time in my little old hotel room. Thank you, Canada. And we welcome in our grandpas. Oh boy, the things that you missed. Star Maidens alone is worth the price of kicking up your pledge. A truly insane experience we all shared. But we also answered some exceptionally dumb Ask EHG questions. Thank you for those to everyone who submitted them. We brought you some not quite top 11 lists. What were they about? You have to kick up that pledge to find out, and you can do that at any time, extrahotgrate.com/club. Today's extra credit topic comes to us from our friend Anthobuzz. It's called Rodman Flush. Anthobuzz writes, in 1997, MTV gifted us with the dreadfully awful Rodman World Tour, 13 episodes of Let's Follow Dennis Rodman Around with a Camera. In episode two, we got a 4-minute clip of a poker game hosted by Rodman with guests Kelsey Grammer, Laura Layton, and Pat Smear. Could it be any more 90s? No. Rodman has no idea who Layton is. Kelsey Grammer is kissed by everyone. And Pat Smear starts a let's all jump into the pool fully clothed event. So Anthobuzz challenges us. Your task. Choose a decade and a poker host who is also a star athlete. Fill out the guests with relevant actors and musicians. Who wins? Who plays dirty? Who doesn't know who one of their guests is? And also include the clip, which is truly amazing. I could not believe
it was upsetting.
I'm going to say the longest 4 minutes I ever spent on any piece of media. Yeah. I couldn't believe that's all it was.
He's so brutal. Bad.
Really, really terrible. Thank you, Anthobuzz, for the question. And thank you for bringing this clip to our attention, because it taught me some things I didn't necessarily want to know.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Before we move on.
Please.
Who is Pat Smear?
Pat Smear is a musician. He was in Foo Fighters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Sarah, why don't you start us off? What is your concept for this?
My decade is the 80s, and my host slash star athlete is Jose Canseco, who actually was on some kind of celebrity poker something or other, like at least one.
No doubt.
10 years ago in our timeline. And he just generally, even before I looked that up and learned that, he just seems like he has the right vibe for this kind of thing. Like, he's just self-aware enough, but not so much so that it would like prevent him from doing something like this, or, you know, cause him to have any shame. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you know who this person is. So the guests are B. Arthur, Eddie Van Halen, and Carl Weathers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He does not know who Eddie is, but mm-hmm. he knows who she is and is like randomly obsessed with the Golden Girls. He's seen every episode. However, it is the 80s. We don't have the internet. He did not get the memo that she actively hates the cheesecake that she's always eating in scenes on the show. So he brought one. They get off to kind of a rocky start. But then they start singing show tunes together around the piano. And by the end of the evening, they are best friends. Carl Weathers doesn't know who anybody is and locks himself in the bathroom when Jose won't stop quoting lines from Rocky at him and insisting that he call Jose Stallion like he called Stallone in the movies. I don't think anybody cheats in this scenario, but when Jose Canseco basically gives up on the game and joins B and Eddie around his giant white piano with like a Ferrari baked into the Lucite top, don't ask me how. Mm-hmm. Carl Weathers takes that opportunity to sneak out, but not before dumping all of the snacks into a briefcase, including the cheesecake, and just leaves without saying goodbye. Dear Carl Weathers' estate slash family, I'm sure he was not actually jerky in this way. IRL, don't sue me. I just thought that based on his Arrested Development character that this would be funny, and how it would play out is just him like dumping a whole cheesecake, including the berries on the top, into a briefcase and piecing out a side door.
Well, the story I read about him on Arrested Development is that the writer wanted him to basically be the delivery of Rocky jokes. That was his character. And then he said, how about we do this instead? I'm just like this super thrifty actor now.
Yeah.
So that was totally his call. So I think Carl Weathers would be into
it. Right. Okay. So a briefcase of caramel corn upon you and your heirs and assigns. Who's next?
I'll go next. I just decided to go with our current day because I don't know any more or less about athletes from yesteryear, so might as well. And thus, our poker host slash star athlete replacing Dennis Rodman is going to be Travis Kelce. I know he's everywhere, but that's how I know who he is. He is well known outside of sport. He's fashionable. He's kind of annoying, all like Dennis Rodman. As for the rest, replacing Kelce Grammer, we're going to go with Jim Parsons, who is also extremely successful from playing a smart person on a sitcom when we have no reason to think he's smart for real. Replacing Laura Layton, we're going to go with Ella Purnell from Fallout, also a teeny tiny bombshell from a very buzzy drama who has stealth comedy chops. And replacing Pat Smear, Jacob Elordi from Saltburn and Priscilla. He's hot. He's sexually liberated. He's got rock swagger because he played Elvis in the Priscilla movie. And here's how it goes. Travis Kelce only knows who Jim Parsons is. When he got together with Taylor Swift, some enterprising journalists went through his old tweets and found some where he just seems like a real sweet dum-dum. And I love that about him. So that's the only reason that he knows who Jim Parsons is, although he calls him Sheldon the whole time. So he doesn't necessarily know exactly who he is beyond that. He asks Ella Purnell what Tori Spelling is like, much as Dennis Rodman asked Laura Layton. And Ella improvises a whole story based on what she knows about Tori from reading tabloids. Travis then realizes he meant to ask about Victoria Justice because he thought Ella Purnell was from iCarly. Jacob Elordi tries to disarm everyone by flirting with them. He, in this version, is the one who makes everybody kiss him, not Jim Parsons. And as for who wins, everyone underestimates Ella Purnell and is also confused by hearing her speak in her real English accent. So she wins the pot and leaves before anybody can successfully get her to jump in the pool. And that's how that goes. Dave.
My decade is the 1970s. The poker host, who's also a star athlete, is Evel Knievel.
Yes. Okay.
The 70s Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Our guests are going to be Suzanne Somers from Three's Company.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Freddie Mercury from Queen.
Yes.
Yes.
You have to remember 1970s, 1970s Stephen King.
So as hell.
Yep. Okay. High and possibly homicidal.
Yes.
Who wins, you may ask? Well, as an adrenaline junkie, Evel is out first because he always raises the pot no matter what is happening. He just keeps on putting money in. He's out in the first hand because he doesn't know how it works. He just keeps on putting money. Raise. He's out. Stephen King eventually wins because, as Tara said, he's 17% cocaine and discovers the secret to poker while in his impromptu trip through space and time. Who plays dirty? Suzanne Somers keeps extra cars securely trapped between her toned thighs.
Of course.
And who doesn't know who one of their guests is? Well, that would be Freddie Mercury, who has no idea who anyone is, but sings off-the-cuff songs about who he imagines them to be and all the hands of poker they play throughout the night. And gorgeous. That's my poker match. Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra, Extra Hot Great. We escape the tyranny of women with the premiere episode of Star Maidens before answering your burning ask EHG questions like, does chili have beans and who can it be now? We celebrated those who weren't quite the best, and nope, that's not what we did. We gave you three not quite top 11 lists and wrapped it all up with our Rodman-esque decade-themed poker show lineups. Next up is a listener game time on EHG Prime. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
we've done it. We're clear.
And Sarah D. Bunting.
By George, that planet's a cantaloupe.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Extra Hot Grade.
That's the way it is. That's the way it always will be. It's a woman's world.
No, not for much longer, Shem.
No.
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 This is Extra Hot Grade Minis. Today's topic, A Monster Calls.
Today's extra credit topic comes to us from Erica. Pick a realistic TV show, past or present, and make one of the characters a supernatural entity. Ghost, vampire, Mayor Wilkins-esque, giant snake monster, etc. She also asked, what is one pro and one con of the change? I will begin. Following her death from preeclampsia, Sybil remains at Downton Abbey as a ghost, helping to mind Sybil Jr. and occasionally interrupting Edith's more Eeyore-ish pronouncements by knocking a crystal decanter off the sideboard. She herself is the con, because I didn't really care for the actor or about the character, but if she's still banging on walls and walking through doors in Tom's room, he's unlikely to get involved with Sarah Bunting, which means I would never have started watching that show, which in the end was kind of a waste of time. Net.
Miss Sarah Bunting. What on earth is she doing here?
Exactly.
On Nashville, there's no question that Deacon has struggled in his efforts at running Highway 65, Raina's old record label. So when he's taking a walk across the Cumberland River pedestrian bridge and hears a female voice's beautiful song, he looks around wildly trying to find the busker who could be his next big thing, only to discover it's coming from the water. That's right, the Cumberland River is home to a mermaid, but not a cutie like Ariel. Marina, Jennifer Nettles, is an old-school siren that lures men to their deaths with her song. Con, Deacon's attempts to record her demo from the riverbank end with him falling in, whereupon Marina smashes his head with a rock and drains his blood before it can wash away. But, pro, the novelty of having a mythical creature among Highway 65's artists lifts all boats, as it were. Good news for Will, the only person on the show who's really worth caring about anymore. Dave.
All right, it's been a while, but we have another little installment of our cinematic universe. We last left Mr. Bates from Downton Abbey. You remember he had his other leg removed, was hired briefly as a croquet hoop, but regained his freedom when he courted a lady who owns a German nightclub. Fed up with the Crawleys and their superpowers, he became the original Mr. Glass from Unbreakable and dedicated his life to their destruction. That's where we left off. Now, one day, Mr. Bates wakes up and discovers a deep footprint-shaped bruise on his back. He thinks little of it until the next full moon, when he's transformed into an evil leg, having been stomped on by the original wereleg. Pro, the wereleg Bates hops through the idyllic English countryside in search of prey, adding much-needed action to Downton Abbey. Con, wereleg Bates, even more prone to whiny self-pity as he laments that no one could, and I quote, ever love a man without legs who became just one leg on each full moon.